We're sitting here with Ian Halliday, author of Dirty Sugar Cookies, which we hope everyone will buy, available from Amazon. And what local bookstores are carrying it, Ian?
In New York.
In New York?
Yeah, I think pretty much any independent bookseller. The one I always give a shout out to is Book Court in Cobble Hill in Brooklyn. That's my personal local bookstore.
Do Borders and Barnes & Noble have it?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, you can always storm the local independent bookstore and demand that they carry Dirty Sugar Cookies.
Okay. My local readers should go storm their local independent bookstore. I think we only have one left here. Is that right, Leland? Jay's Bookstore? Jay's Bookstall? My local readers should go down to Jay's and ask for it.
All right.
So we're sitting here with Ann Halliday and her charming son, Milo.
Hi, Milo.
And my baby, Leland.
Hi, Mommy.
Groovy. And we're going to be interviewing her about her hilarious new book, Dirty Sugar Cookies.
And in your book, you talk a lot about the torture of the school cafeteria with all the different cliques and the claustrophobia and the general horror of the whole thing. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Oh, sure. The school that I went to was this private school in Indianapolis where we behaved quite well. I mean, it wasn't complete pandemonium, and in fact, I'd been sent there away from this parochial school I'd been attending because that school was complete pandemonium and ding-dong rappers being hurled across. And then suddenly, although we had this very tight social structure, it was just, wow, survival of the fittest. And like these mean boys who could just fly the really nasty, gnarly comments that just ruined the food. And I was very shy and very obedient and very scared of teachers and scared of older kids and a picky eater. So it was just a nightmare every day at 11:15.
And how about that game you guys used to play?
Oh, this is with salt. You would pick up a salt shaker and you'd turn to the person on the right and say, "This is the salt." And they look back at you and say, "The what?" And you say, "Salt." And they say, "The what?" You say, "The salt." And they say, "Oh, the salt." And then they pass it on to the next guy while you're passing them the pepper or passing them the sugar or a fork or a spoon.
Now, you, your summer camp chapter, that was just really classic. And when I was reading it, I was thinking about my summer camp experiences and how horribly homesick I used to get. We would only go away for 1 week, and I would spend the first half of that week writing letters home, begging my parents to come and pick me up. But your summer camp chapter is so positive. No Lord of the Fly experiences there?
No. There really weren't. Summer camp was extremely positive for me, I think, because I'm an only child and there were neighborhood kids around in the summer, but, you know, it was catch as catch can. Sometimes they'd be loaded up into their family car and taken on vacation and then there was no one to play with. And to be released from the tyranny of what was served in my house. And my mother's an excellent cook, and I was provided this wonderful food that was just torture for a picky eater. And I got to a camp.
Right.
They just didn't give a damn what we ate. And so mostly what I ate was white sugar on white bread.
Right, the sugar bread.
And candy twice a day. There was this commissary where, you know, my father had put, I think, $10 into an account at the beginning of the summer, and then twice a day I could go choose a candy bar or, you know, a lollipop or, you know, I think like there was a time when frozen juice became a really popular thing to choose. Camp was amazing. I wish I could go back there. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, when I started reading the chapter and I, you know, you mentioned the director, I started to cringe. I was thinking, oh great, here comes the sexual abuse, because that would have been the place for it. And I got to the end of the chapter, I thought, woo, thank goodness.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every memoir you read nowadays, even the funny ones, there's always the obligatory sexual abuse, but
I'm not in Dirty Sugar.
That's
okay. I'm escaped.
So, Anne, going back to your childhood, you talk a lot about being a picky eater, which I was too. And Mom says she doesn't...
You were not!
Mom doesn't really remember it, but I would be truly horrified to go to other people's houses for dinner or to go to restaurants that I wasn't familiar with where I wasn't sure I could get pizza or anything.
We never went to restaurants. Oh. We didn't have any money.
Well, me too. I remember going to a friend's house, and they had this big platter of hamburgers, which are a food that I've never liked, and a child was just... My mother's own hamburgers were like baseballs. They were really, really, really round, so they were really broad in the center, and my jaws didn't open that wide. So when I went to my friend's house and saw this big platter of hamburgers, I was just like horrified, and I took a little tiny bite, and they were awful to me. And I put it down, and they wouldn't let me leave the table until I ate it all.
Oh,
and I was like, I had my courtesy bite, and they're like, you still have hamburger. I think I told him I was allergic to it. It was just like awful. Oh, and I, you know, I said I didn't feel well. I said it was too pretty to eat. I was just this 8-year-old mind scrambling for anything I could say to get off the hook.
And it seems like you kind of just did a little switch in your head when you, maybe around when you ate that spanakopita. You know, the funny thing is, you know, that was kind of like one of your first gourmet experiences. I don't know if you noticed on the blog, one of the first gourmet foods I ever cooked was spanakopita. But it seems like you made a little switch in your head at that point.
Yeah,
when you ate that.
I think so. I mean, I think it was all kind of tied into, you know, wanting to go live this bohemian existence and, you know, being in this hole-in-the-wall restaurant that had a dress tacked to the wall and had hookahs.
Right.
It was not very Indianapolis, which meant, you know, it felt very exciting to me, and I thought I was in Grand Village all of a sudden. So,
right, exactly.
I was like, yeah, I'll eat this stuff and then I'll have the life I want.
So, can you talk a little bit about your eating experiences abroad? I spent a lot of time in France, and that's one of the first places that I really got excited about. It was one of the first times I had my own kitchen, and I was able to cook for myself, and I had markets and grocery stores, and that was really my first sort of independent cooking adventures were there. I know you spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia.
Yeah. Well, when I was traveling in Europe, I was sleeping on train station floors, and thinking that I was starving to death when, in fact, pretty much the only thing I could afford to eat was a big loaf of bread every day. So, in fact, I was gaining quite a lot of weight traveling around Europe and sleeping on train station floors. But I didn't have enough money to eat anywhere, and I didn't have my own kitchen. I was always on the move. But then when I got to Asia, the food is so amazing. Any street stall that you go to is going to be so good.
And then there's this whole chapter in there called the bet, you know, what are the odds? But it was a fascinating chapter, and I had never even heard of this best odds diet.
Right.
What is that all about? Is that something new that, you know, they've, of course, you know, brand new that came up with and since Leland was born 27 years ago?
Right. I think it might have been the passing of...
They're always coming up with new stuff.
Yeah, that's right. I know. Well, by the time I became pregnant with my first child, it had become, you know, a classic, and that was the one thing that I knew about having a baby was that if you found out you were pregnant and you were going to have this baby, you should run out and get a copy of this book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. So immediately I did so, and just as immediately started to just rankle about everything about this book. I hated the illustrations, like there were these wizened, ugly-looking babies, and, you know, these washed-out quilts and women in these lacy, frumpy, matronly pregnancy gowns, and I was just like, oh no, this isn't the kind of pregnancy I'm going to have, or the kind of baby I'm going to have, or the kind of mother I'm going to be. And there within it is, if you want to have a healthy baby, you'll follow the best odds diet. I mean, they just make you feel that any white sugar that crosses your lips is going to, you know, take weight away from your growing baby or something. It was almost, you know, like, why would you hurt your baby in that way to eat some white rice instead of brown rice?
You said Milo just had a hot dog. That kind of answers the next question. Are Greg and the kids vegetarian?
Wait, a hot dog made out of meat? What do you say? No, they're not vegetarians. And in fact, Greg's new play just started previews, Pig Farm. And in research, he had visited a bunch of pig farms, including an organic one upstate. And as a gift, the pig farmers laid a bunch of like pork roasts and tenderloins and bacon and things on it. So they're all sitting in our freezer. And I know how those pigs were raised. I've seen a video of those pigs walking around their very nice farm and have information on how they were slaughtered. So I was like, well, maybe if I'm going to have to cook it, maybe I should try some of this. Sounds pretty good. So I might have a little lapse in my vegetarianism coming up too.
Nothing wrong with that. You really seem to be someone who believes in eating for pleasure and eating what makes us feel good and what makes us happy. So I wondered, with all this business of Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and the new farmers markets opening, how much do you think we need to be concerned with that kind of thing?
It's a subject of endless fascination and one that, you know, I strive to do well with it, but I'm sure, you know, my aspirations are riddled with hypocrisy. I think I'm largely motivated by really gross things that I hear about, like what's in, how meat is prepared, or what's in the milk that isn't organic. But then I read the New Yorker's article, I don't know if you guys read that recent New Yorker article about big organics and, you know, what is organic food, and like, you know, well, if the strawberry is organic but it's flown in from Chile, what is, how does that
right.
compare with a non-organic strawberry that was raised in New York? And, you know, you add into it, like, having two little kids and having Greg Play going into production, and sometimes I'm just running by Met Foods, snatching whatever I can. I also, you know, with my love of really cheap Vietnamese food and cheap Chinese Chinatown food, you know, I don't think you can have this dish with shrimp that's $5 and have it be responsibly farmed or caught, or, you know, so in my, I have very shaky logic with that. And it's also, I mean, you know, it's like, it's a class issue in this country for sure of, you know, who is it that's shopping at Whole Foods, who can afford to pay those prices, and, you know, who gets all jacked up about the aesthetics of what the grocery store looks like. That's appealing. You know, I'd rather shop there than the dingy local Gristini's.
What's next for you, Anne? Are you going to be in any more bookstores?
Let's see. I'm doing a reading on Wednesday night at Book Court in Brooklyn, and then I'm going to take a break until September, and then I'll go on tour. And I think.
Are you going on a real tour?
I'm going on a real. I'm going to plop back down from cyberspace and resume my physical body, and I'll go to Austin and San Francisco and Portland, Oregon. Yeah.
Well, we want to thank you, Anne, for. Traveling all the way to out to Leland's apartment for this interview. It's been really great for us. I hope it's been good for you too.
It's been wonderful.
I'm sure our readers will love tuning in, and we wish you the best of luck with your book. And enjoy it. It deserves to get a wide readership. And it's been a pleasure to meet young Milo here.
You got anything to say, Milo? Milo's like miming the whole.
Hey, Leland, don't you have a cookie for Milo?
There's a cookie sitting right here.
Yeah, we've been trying to force him to eat it, but he won't do it.